If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today, no drinking.
I'll tell you what. I've written in my little notebook. I've put stop fucking sniffing because that's the first I realised so much. And 2 seconds in, I think I might have a tick. I've sniffed.
Yeah, so I noticed as soon as we joined the call, the first thing you did was sniff.
Yeah, so the sniffing is, it's kind of lining up with today's episode being Cuban Missile Crisis because they like the gear. Maybe I've been sniffing too much. I haven't.
You're not thinking of Colombia. Colombian Missile.
Cubans like cigars, don't they?
Cigars and rum is Cuba.
Yeah, sorry.
How's your week been, mate?
Let's have a little chat because I feel like we've not spoken.
That's so true. So cracking week for me. On Tuesday, I went to Alton Towers.
Oh, how was the big
for the ride? First time? So I don't know whether it's just me getting older or what, but I wasn't scared. I had no feelings towards the rides, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The majority of them, it was just very much like, oh, okay, we're just, you know, we're flying through the air, sitting strapped in. My heart rate didn't get up that much. And I was like, maybe it's just because I'm older or bigger or I don't know. It just wasn't as exhilarating as going to a theme park normally is.
Yeah, when I've been on rides the last couple of years, instead of the joy, I just start feeling sick now.
Okay, no, I didn't feel sick. I've got a stronger stomach than you.
My stomach's just like, nah.
I'm not scared.
No, I ain't scared.
I promise I'm not scared.
I just want to be sick. I just need to be sick.
I just need to be sick. So what we were doing instead was popping the old Zins before the rides to get that Nicky rush.
You love that
rush. To try and kind of... I fucking love it. I'm fully addicted to Zins. I now don't vape or smoke, and on nights out, I don't vape or smoke.
That's got to be leading to some sort of gum disease, right?
Listen, you got to choose your vice, and
you have.
Especially, I've noticed if I'm out drinking. Yeah, well, it's not even shit breath. It's probably your gums will rot away and your teeth will fall out. But if I'm out drinking, I just, the craving for cigarettes or vapes is just so strong. This takes away all of that. And I've noticed I don't get as bad hangovers.
Fair dues. Everyone, pick up a Zin. Share it with your wives and your
family. Pick up a Zin. Please do. Kids as well. They come in loads of fun flavours. But it looks like they might be banned as well for the exact same reason as vapes were banned. Kids can get them too easily and conceal them too easily.
They just can get hold of fucking anything they want nowadays, mate. Zin, heroin,
they just ruin it for it. No, don't do you. They ruin it for us.
Kids are cunts.
How has your week been?
Talk about kids being cunts. I think I might have had the worst week of my life this week.
Man.
I know.
Dark times for Chris.
You are obviously aware of what's gone on, but little one has been in hospital a week. I'm not going to dive into it too much, but it's been a rough ride. And then whilst in hospital, we get the dreadful news that Diogo Jota, the Liverpool player, has died in a car crash.
God. So You're a Liverpool fan.
I am, big time. And it's, yeah, so it's been the thought of my child possibly being, her leg's not working for the foreseeable future, but that's, we're out the end of that now, so that's all good. And then topped off with the death of, yeah, go on.
In terms of how that could have gone for your little one, it probably went the best that it could have done.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, it's something, if it's what it was initially thought, which is a syndrome, is Guillain-Barre, so it's the body attacks the nerve system instead of like the infection or the virus of whatever you got, and yeah, her legs stopped working, but luckily it was not that, and she is now running around again. I'm getting attitude. She's done baking today, so I think we're good.
You know, it's fine when A, the baking happens, but B, the attitude.
I know, and the good thing is her legs are working and she's back in the kitchen where she belongs, making me cakes.
Perfect.
Happy day.
That's all you need from a 9-year-old, to be fair, isn't it?
Get in that kitchen, excellent, make daddy a cake, and we're good to go.
Get in that kitchen, you little child.
Yes.
Should we also just talk quickly about the reception to the first podcast? 40 whole listens across various platforms.
That
might have gone up.
With that.
We had 3 in America. Shout out to Brie for listening in North Dakota. Hopefully she listens to another one and we didn't put her off the first one.
And whoever the other two were.
And whoever the other two were, who we don't know. Mystery. One was in California.
Was that right? Yeah.
And then where is the other one? Like Texas or something? Like we're talking right on the border.
Deep South.
Yeah. So I don't know if they were listening to an episode of Backseat Historian before. I don't know, either having just got into the US through the old wall or going the other way for whatever reason.
Talking about the old wall, have you seen what Trump's come out with today? Or might have been yesterday.
No.
He's forgotten the name of the leader of Japan and he's just called him Mr. Japan.
Mr. Japan?
Yeah.
Fuck, what a fucking...
Why fucking not?
What? The amount of videos that I've seen now of Obama... And it's crazy how whatever side of politics you're on, it's just so far removed having a politician who can actually form sentences have coherent meaning to his words compared to what they have. Oh, and in other political news adjacent to the US, have you seen that Elon Musk is setting up his own party?
Oh, for Christ's sake.
It's mental. Oh, fuck, I can't remember. I've given up.
Yeah, give up on that one. That wasn't interesting. It was.
No, you're quite right. America Party.
Fuck yeah.
I'm not even joking. And surely the fact that he was born in South Africa, surely that means he can't. I mean, he did hold political office, so maybe he can. Maybe he's got citizenship over there now.
That country makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It's just fucking lawless. It's as lawless as it was during the times of the Wild West. On my 2 cents on the situation. And then also speaking about the reception of our first podcast, we also got some feedback as well, which is cracking. Thank you very much, especially to the Discord community.
Big up my homies.
So we see you, we hear you, we hear your feedback. We might implement it. We might not. We feel you.
Oh, and another one, and I was about to drop the Schmeegs bomb again, is... Someone has kindly pointed out that Schmeegs doesn't exist. So Megan has been forever, since I've known her, has been called Schmeegs. I don't know why. Where did it come from? Is that Gollum? Do you represent Gollum?
Yeah. So my dad used to call me Schmeegle, and then I watched Lord of the Rings and I was like, that is not flattering. Apparently I am like Gollum.
You've got the same hairstyle.
But other nicknames from my dad have been, for my sister, Pilchard Head. There was a phase of Pilchard Head.
Yeah.
And Von Die Poop and Stinkin' Head, which came there with a song.
So it's full of them.
If you might at some point in the future get the song as well. You never know. She might make an appearance.
Like it could be. She might.
Your wife.
If I let her out the basement, but we'll figure that out.
We let her out the kitchen.
But yeah, if anyone hears me dropping the Schmeegs, I am referencing Megan.
The Schmeegel.
The Schmeegel. I think we have we nattered for long enough? Shall we get into this?
Yeah, come on. Let's get into this.
Take me on a journey.
The Cuba. I'm going to call this. I haven't asked ChatGPT for any name recommendations, so this is me riffing.
Good for you.
But what about the Cuban Missile Oopsie?
I like
oopsie,
that.
Cuban Missile I Oopsie. Like that. It was a very big oopsie, just to set the scene. The closest that we have come to nuclear war, which a bit of a spoiler alert here would be bad for everybody involved. So setting the scene.
I don't know, but I don't agree about that.
Oh, what you think? Oh, you've played Fallout, haven't you?
No, just global cleansing. Depends who's the one getting nuked, doesn't it?
Yeah, it depends who strikes first, I suppose, doesn't
exactly
it?
Exactly that.
So setting the scene, we are in the midst of the Cold War. There's a bit of back and forth about when the Cold War starts, but I think the vast majority of people say that it's about World War II, 1945. And especially in terms of the biggest fear during the Cold War is nuclear war. What we have is 1945, and as I was corrected, it was little boy, somebody's little boy, that was dropped on either Hiroshima or Nagasaki.
It was a little boy, apparently.
Because it was not little, I suppose. Just, you know, right. Just a little bit of tongue-in-cheek before you drop a city-leveling nuclear bomb.
Was nicknamed a little boy.
The bomb. It was called, right, it was called Little Boy, the bomb that was dropped on one of either Hiroshima or Nagasaki. And again, people are going to get aggy that I don't know which one it was dropped on. If you know that, you're a nerd.
And
nerd.
If you'd like a little boy dropped on you, you're a paedophile.
Nerds and paedophiles, a cracking way to start our discussion on the Cuban Missile Crisis. So we have three main characters that we're going to be talking about. The first one, everyone knows, RIP, someone up to my brother, JFK.
He got
a lovely, not very nice headshot. Not very many years after the resolution to the Cuban Missile Crisis, but in January the 19th, 1961, JFK becomes president. He is the youngest president elect, not the youngest president, because somehow somebody else managed to get in there after, who was somehow older than Kennedy was when he was elected, but younger than Kennedy was when he got sworn in. So
right.
19th of January 1961, JFK becomes the president of the United States. And in his inaugural address, this man can say some fucking speeches. I'm telling you now, there are quotes on quotes on quotes. But the first quote that he says, even during his inaugurational speech on the 20th of January, "Man holds in his human hands the power to abolish all forms of poverty and all forms of human life."
Too so already, right.
Isn't it? Like, big up.
Yeah.
Big up my man JFK. He goes on to say, "Unconditional war can't lead to unconditional victory. Mankind must put an end to war, or war will put an end to mankind."
Wise Damn. Words as well.
Incredible words. Again, I think because we are so used to era of Trump, and by extension, I would say Bojo, Boris Johnson.
Oh, just they're these all thick. But isn't it funny that the ones that speak sense get shot in the fucking noggin?
Isn't it? Isn't it mental? Yeah. Although I'm sure there's an awful lot of people listening that would say JFK might not have spoken sense.
No, that's fair. I don't know enough. Just those two sentences, I've got his back.
He's incredible. He is a crazy Nepo baby. He was congressman and a senator, but his father was like the richest man in the States at the time. He fought in World War II. But something perhaps to bear in mind when thinking about how things play out in this is the fact that he is viewed more as a playboy than a politician. The Democratic Party that he is in charge of is viewed as being very soft on defense. Basically, he's got a lot to prove, or he feels like he's got an awful lot to prove, which will kind of explain some of the hard line positions he takes, and a very nice term that I heard in some of my research was missteps. Some of the missteps that he makes in handling this very, very difficult diplomatic situation. So JFK is the first one. He's 43 years old.
Sorry, did you say he thought in the World War II, or did you say that was his dad?
No, he did. He did.
Okay.
JFK fought in World War II. So he has experience of war.
Yeah.
On the other side in the USSR, we have the premier of the Communist Party, Nikita Khrushchev. He is the opposite of JFK. He is old enough to be JFK's dad. He fought in the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. He fought in World War One, and he has been the first secretary of the Communist Party since 1956. He's also being pressured by the powers that be in the USSR to be tough on defence, and they believe that America is acting very aggressively on the world stage. Mental. Mental.
What a
Who
surprise.
Would have thought that the USA could be acting aggressively?
Who would tarnish them with that
brush? I just
couldn't
fathom it. What? Nah. What?
Really
never knew that.
Shit, and that's bang out of order.
Isn't
I'm
it?
I'm feeling upset.
And then the third person that we need to think about is big man himself, Fidel Castro.
Big
what
my boy Fidel.
A guy. My man
I've
Fidel.
A, I've got an interesting fact about him at the end.
Oh, at the end. Oh, yeah. My God. Now come. Listen to the end, everyone, for Chris's interesting facts. Just to recall, to 2 weeks ago, the last interesting fact, which was fucking incredible, the robots, they didn't work. The robots
that was true, by the
work.
Way.
Yeah, it was true.
I actually
so.
Looked, after I hadn't looked it up, I looked it up, and that is a fact. So they had robots being, clearing it up, and the nuclear dust, whatever. Well, the nuclear jizz fried them.
Yeah. The nuclear
jizz. Yeah, that was a fact.
Yes, well, well done on that cracking nuclear jizz fact. Have you got any more for after this?
Oh, I have a few.
Oh, wait and see, everybody. That is definitely something to wait until the end of the podcast for. And then just, I suppose, Fidel Castro, he's been in power in Cuba since the early 60s. After he overthrows Batista, I didn't get his first name, don't ask me.
Also
this
a wrestler.
Guy Batista. Oh, yeah. Oh, what, Dave Batista?
Yep, exactly. Same man.
Oh, man. Yeah.
His granddad? Granddad.
Perhaps it would help to just imagine Dave Batista as the guy that Fidel Castro absolutely suplexes in order to get into power.
Big old boy. Yeah, that's...
Big boy.
If Fidel's dropping him around, he deserves it.
Yeah, 100%.
Take the
so,
power.
So Fidel Castro is more left-wing, but interestingly, as we'll go on to discuss, not communist. In fact, he has a deep mistrust of the Communist Party in Cuba because they don't like him. When he comes into power in the early 60s, he's younger than Kennedy. He is seen as a bit brash and chaotic, and the Communist Party don't like him. So, what have we got? That is the background. A little bit more background into US-USSR relations up until this point. So the US had troops in Russia since World War One until 1919. And they were actually helping the white Russians who were the ops to
opposed
the Bolsheviks
to the
during the Revolution.
Black Russians?
Yes, the Bolsheviks.
Ah. Not by skin colour, I guess.
Oh my God, white Russian.
Oh, a lovely cocktail.
Ah, very nice cocktail. Although, like cream in a cocktail. I mean, they're not bad.
You think that doesn't sound right, but then I can't remember what I was making the other week, but it had egg whites in it, and that was fucking immense.
Oh, every bar that you go to in London where you're going to be paying £20 for a cocktail, it's going to have egg whites in it. And it's just a fucking nightmare. I'm drinking egg whites. Protein, I suppose, a bit of protein.
All the gains.
In 1946, she's talking about the rhetoric around the USSR. Churchill first refers to the Iron Curtain. So around that point, the USSR is doing its separation. Oh, we're not part of the rest of the you know, we're separated from the West. We are our own thing. And a lot of people view Hiroshima and Nagasaki as a warning to the USSR. So even in 1945, the tensions are building. The USA wants to deter the USSR from trying to cultivate power in Asia as much as possible. And then by 1949, both sides have nuclear missiles.
Ooh.
Or nuclear weapons, right?
Damn.
Which means that what we get, the reason the Cold War is called cold is because it becomes a war of perception, right? So you have weapons that you can't use. Because if you use them...
My dick's bigger than yours, Cuba.
Literally, dick swinging with nuclear jizz. Who would have thought nuclear jizz would have come back in?
Little boys.
In fact, that could be a cracking name for the episode.
Oh, what?
The Cuban missile oopsie, dick swinging with nuclear jizz.
Such a professional
title.
Honestly,
this is your boron's... Morons operated by morons all over again. It's he strikes again.
I think, yeah, I think we need to stop pre-planning these names and one will just come to us within.
Exactly. Who needs ChatGPT?
No one. I am ChatGPT.
Nobody. Oh.
I'm not really.
You are.
No, I'm not. You're flattering
yes.
me, but.
So, no, you're quite right. And then in 1961, President Eisenhower, who was the predecessor to Kennedy, had severed diplomatic relations with Cuba. Cuba and the USA don't like each other. USA and USSR don't like each other. Cuba doesn't like communists. That's how we're going into the 60s. The swinging 60s, swinging about dicks with nuclear jizz.
The dick swinging 60s.
Yeah. Oh, also, the name, talking about party names and Elon Musk's America Party.
Fuck
the
yeah.
name of Fidel America. The name of Fidel Castro's party is the July the 26th movement.
What is the what happened on that date? I like it. It's very to the
know.
Point. Oh.
I don't know what happened. It's just what
there's
it's
no
called. That was a little fun fact.
No.
There's no background. Look it up yourself.
You come in with facts, you need to come in with information.
Fuck. You're right. I'm sorry. Maybe I should have had a drink.
You should have done that.
Might have made me able to riff a little bit more.
There you go.
So there's a little bit of background as to what diplomatic relationships are looking like at this time. So the first date that we have is the 15th of April, 1961. And 8 aircraft take off from Nicaragua.
Lovely cigars.
A country that I feel gets an awful lot more mentions and shout outs than it should.
What, in this story?
Or just
in general?
Ever?
They do make really nice cigars and they're quite cheap as well.
Are they? What, cheaper than Cubans?
Oh, 100%. Mental. Cubans are. I mean, I'm not a cigar enthusiast. Well, I like a cigar, but every Cuban I've had, I've spent a lot of money on and I've really not enjoyed them. Whereas a Nicaraguan are relatively cheap and I've always really liked them.
That's crazy. It's almost like, I don't know if I can draw this comparison or not, but I really like cheap olive oil.
Yeah, especially when it's the price of olive oil is disgusting. So I'm not spending that much money on a good
bottle. Oh my God.
I'm not drinking it. Do you know what I mean?
This might be that some people do drink it. My dad drinks it.
I used to put it in protein shakes, to be fair. It's good calories.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't need those anymore, do you?
No, getting too... What do you mean? My brain took a second to realise then. I need to stop gaining.
So the second bomb is little boy and fat man. It's just a picture of you on the side.
It's me and your dad.
And a bottle of olive oil.
Oh, we're getting lubed up.
Oh, man. Lubing up, ready for the dick swing. Okay. So 8 aircraft take off from Nicaragua, the MVP, that are painted to look like Cuban Air Force aircraft. But are in actual fact, guess what? World War II bombers from the USA. What?
you're a plane enthusiast. What bombers are they? Do you know?
No.
Huh. Thanks.
Stop asking me questions.
You should know these things. I know you like plane spotting and all that stuff.
I have a life. I don't like plane spotting. Fake news. Okay. They're actually US World War II bombers, and this is a CIA attack on Cuba.
Wait, so they is this undercover US here?
Undercover US aircraft taking off from Nicaragua, painted to look like Cuban Air Force. And what they want to do is to capitalize on the revolution and the chaos that's happening in Cuba at the time by hitting Cuban Air Force bases, military installations. Unfortunately, it doesn't go well.
Who's causing this mischief?
So they don't, I don't think they like, I mean, they don't like Cuba anyway, and they want to weaken it however they can, because Cuba is very anti-US. What? Nah, never knew that. But unfortunately, they miss the majority of their targets. The military installations remain mostly intact and whole. Yeah, Kennedy's pretty fucking embarrassed by this,
so after
obviously.
Those two phenomenal speeches, he's dropped his load and missed.
He might be a man of words and not actions.
Yeah, I'd
maybe.
Take it all back. I've gone off him now.
If you're off him now, just wait till you hear the rest of what happens.
Bring it up.
He cancels any further airstrikes, leaving his allies in Cuba in the lurch. But this isn't the end of it. On the 17th of April, Brigade 2506 lands on the Bay of Pigs. Have you heard of the Bay of Pigs before?
What do you reckon my answer to that is?
Okay, so the Bay
not.
Of Pigs. These are all CIA-run operations, and the Bay of Pigs is they took Cuban exiles that have landed in Miami, which is why there's such a strong Hispanic community there, and they trained them up, and they were like, we'll train you up, we'll give you some weapons, you go and try and take control. They basically want to implement a US-friendly government, and it all fails. Very, very badly. They receive heavy fire from the Castro-friendly militias. Yep. And the rainfall saturates their equipment.
Oh my God.
And there's no air power because he's cancelled all the strikes. And so it was 20,000 Cuban troops then go to the beachfront. So these are the Castro rebel forces, then go to the beachfront and take 1,200 prisoners.
What, US prisoners? Sorry.
Then, well, these are the US-trained Cuban exiles that are going back to try and take control.
Yeah.
It goes very badly. But in order to get these prisoners back, the US has to give Castro £53 million of baby food and medicine. So,
I mean,
not
good bartering
great.
£53 million. He's looking out for the lads, though. Baby food and medicine. I mean, he's...
It looks very good. Castro is cracking at PR. At least at this stage, he's cracking at PR. Because basically, he'd heard about it from all of the Cuban exiles. There was in Miami, or in Florida, there is a Kraken network of spies that Castro used, and he found out about this plan before it had happened. So he was literally lying in wait for the 20,000 troops. Not for the 20,000 troops, however many troops it was. It was 20,000 Cuban troops. This plan wasn't actually Kennedy's. It was given the green light by President Eisenhower, but obviously it's happened under Kennedy's leadership. So he is very fucking embarrassed.
I can imagine.
And Cuba is now number one priority on his agenda.
On his hit list. Damn.
Then June 1961 rolls around, and Kennedy, against the advice of his top advisors, goes to a summit in Austria and has a sit down with Khrushchev. And they end up debating.
So Khrushchev is the USSR bloke.
Yes, he is the premier in the USSR.
Cool, right.
And they end up debating the pros and cons of Marxism. And Kennedy loses quite badly. He afterwards said it was one of the worst experiences of his life, and he was, in his words, savaged by Khrushchev.
He's got to have a win coming, right? He can't keep this embarrassment up.
I'll let you decide.
That's a yes. I'm glass half full.
Go along. Glass half full. He goes away thinking that, again, he's got a lot to prove, especially to Khrushchev and the USSR, because he thinks he just performs so badly in that debate. However, Khrushchev says in his memoirs that he actually gained a lot of respect for Kennedy. And what happens is Kennedy actually says that the USSR and the US are equals, and that's the first time in modern relations that has ever happened. So Khrushchev thinks, oh, maybe this is a guy who is more open to diplomatic relations with us. Whereas Kennedy thinks, I need to show him who's boss. I need to get that dick swinging and that nuclear juice flowing.
And especially because he's American, you can guarantee that dick is big.
It is swinging. And then September 1961 comes something called the Non-Aligned Movement. So 25 countries come around and they say, they declare that they do not want, they do not want to have any influence over them from either the USSR or the US. They want to be independent states. And at the time, the world is split in two. You're either on the USSR side or the US side, right?
Okay.
And they say, we don't want to be dominated by your powers. We don't want to be used as pawns in your game of whatever the fuck's going on. It is a zero-sum game. So the USSR and the US.
What does that mean?
So it means that if you're not with me, you're against me. So because there's only two real powers.
Why can't we be friends?
Why can't we be friends? They view that the world falls only under two spheres of influence, that of the USSR and that of the US. And if you're not on my side, you're against me. If you're not with me, you're against me. That's kind of what that means.
Fair enough.
The US says that they don't want anyone from the from America, the continents of America, so North, South America. So I don't want any of you guys to join this movement.
If finally,
guess who does?
They could
guess
have
who signs
a wall.
It? Oh,
big
let's build a wall.
JFK.
Brup, brup, brup. Guess who signs it?
JFK?
Cuba. No, not JFK.
Wait, what?
Cuba. Oh, fuck me.
Sidetrack, bruv. Look, we've been talking about random... Yeah. Sorry, I apologise.
Okay, right. So Cuba just joins despite the fact...
Cuba.
Cuba joins despite the fact that the US says it doesn't want any countries in the Western Hemisphere to join this movement. So this means that the USSR is taking note of Cuba because of everything that's happened with the Bay of Pigs and the fact that they are clearly 100% against US interest. And the US has decided that it wants to overthrow the revolutionary government once and for all. Enter the best name for an operation I have ever seen in my life.
Can't hit us.
I could give you a million guesses, you'll never get it.
Give me a clue and give me five guesses.
Okay, it's an animal and it's a small one.
How many
and
legs
it's furry. But it's four, but it has on the second half of it a name of a bird that we have in this country that are mean.
Swan.
No.
Swan. Duck? No, ducks are lovely.
No.
A mean bird. Emu?
In this
goose,
country.
Goose.
It's an operation mongoose. Operation mongoose. Isn't that incredible?
You mongoose. That is pretty... What's the relevance between it?
Don't know.
Is there?
So,
it's fine.
Oh, I don't know. I guess they're feisty little... And they want to be secretive. And it's a feisty little secretive fucking...
Mongoose.
Animal.
You cheeky mongoose, little mongoose.
Maybe. You cheeky mongoose, you. So this is the largest covert CIA operation to date. And it becomes the blueprint for future... covert US action to overthrow governments, regime changes. It's a 4-point plan, right? 4 points. Subversion. They go around and they do things like blowing up railways. Cuba is a big exporter of sugar. They go and put some poison in some sugar waiting on the docks to be exported, all to ruin Cuban the regime's reputation in the wider world stage and also at home. The second is an economic embargo. So in 1960, it was an informal embargo anyway, in which the US stopped buying certain stuff from Cuba. But officially, in February 1962, they fully stop all economic trade with Cuba.
Fuck.
Which is fucking devastating for That's Cuba wild. Because 85% of its trade comes from the USA. And this is why, you know what Cuba's famous for? You know, the old cars is all old American muscle cars.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that, did you? You were about to say cigars, weren't you? Cigars, not allowed.
Because I'm pretty sure Americans can't buy Cuban cigars. I might be wrong, but I think that's a fact.
No, it's still in force today.
Everything.
It's not changed. Yeah, the economic embargo is still in force today. So the reason that they have all of these old American cars is that they can't buy any more from America, and it's the closest car manufacturer to them.
Okay.
So they just don't get any others in. And then stage 3 and 4 are political and military pressure. So Cuba is suspended from the Organization of American States in 1962. And in terms of military pressure, US starts doing loads of military exercises on the border and the surrounding islands with Cuba. One of which is they have an exercise on an island nearby. I can't remember what the island's name is, but they name it in the exercise OTSAC, which is Castro backwards. Incredible. Operation Mongoose, man. OTSAC. So he did actually figure that out and realized that the US was planning for and staging very overtly an invasion of Cuba.
Goddamn.
Is this
so they
could
get their cigars back?
Yes.
We want your damn cigars, boy.
I want your cigars, man. They just taste so good. Or bad. And they smell disgusting. Do you remember?
No, they don't.
When
it's
you smoked one at that wedding in 2023 and you were sat on the front steps of this very nice rural manor smoking a cigar and the whole indoor hall stank of cigar smoke. Do you remember?
That's because I'm a boss, little lady, and I like my cigars.
Don't deny me my cigars.
Don't deny
it's
me my cigars and my bourbon whiskey.
It's so un-American.
America!
Also, I'm here to save the motherfucking day,
yeah.
How many times do you think that we're going to sing that during this?
Plenty times. It's
America. Too many. America. Alongside this, there are 638 assassination attempts against Castro.
Fuck
638.
Fuck. Is this like the shitty assassination attempt on Trump when someone accidentally nipped his ear with a fucking fly?
No, it's so much worse than that. So it's things like they gifted him a brand new wetsuit with a special fungus sewn in to give him a skin condition.
Who's giving him this? Have you watched Four Lions when it's the guy trying to buy the bottles of bleach? Is it a bit like that? It's like, hey, have another present,
could
Mr. Castro.
10 bottles of bleach, please. did you disguise
gifts?
Your voice? Wait, what? Yeah, I pretended to be a woman.
Can I have 10 bottles of
bleach? Why does a woman have a beard? Obviously, we're not doing video, so. Chris has covered
one
his
day.
Beard with his hands and became a woman before my very eyes. It was incredible.
I tucked my RIP Faz between my legs. I covered my beard and I am now a lady.
I'm a real boy. Cool. They also got one of, and I love this, Castro had a harem of women, of
what
femmes that he had living with him in the Hilton in Havana. The CIA got one of his amours to give him some cold cream with poison laced inside.
What's cold cream? Like vapor rub?
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, okay. Something like that. And unsurprisingly, none of this worked.
Cold cream, not vapor rub. Vaporize rub.
Vaporize rub. That would only work if he was going to be vaporized. I get it. If he was going to be vaporized by the cream, and I think that's not the case.
Well, he obviously withstood that one.
So whilst none of this worked, Cuba's economy did suffer pretty badly.
Shock.
And because it's so obvious and overt, the intentions that the US have towards Cuba and specifically to Castro, he has now finally turned to the USSR. He wants in on the Warsaw Pact.
Oh, shit.
We spoke about the Warsaw
Ruskies.
Pact before. Yeah, so the Warsaw Pact is like Poland, the satellite states is like the
buffer.
Okay,
yeah, that we spoke about the last one, didn't
we? We did. Well done, you remembered something. It's all coming back to me now.
Nice.
So he wants in on the Warsaw Pact, but Khrushchev is like, no, that's too overt. We're tying together too much. If you become part of it, then it's kind of like Article 5 of NATO. If the US decides to invade Cuba, then USSR and its allies would have to go in defense, which again is probably just going to lead to a nuclear war. So he's saying, no, I'm not going to let you join the Warsaw Pact. What I am going to offer you instead is...
Oh.
Missiles.
Oh, snap.
Woo! Here enters... The missile crisis, oopsies. So a metric to talk about in terms of measuring power during the Cold War is something called the missile gap. It's a barometer of progress. So JFK had mistakenly thought, and he actually used it as a tagline for his election campaign, that the US was behind the USSR in terms of the number of missiles that they had. He got into power and found out that was very wrong. So October the 23rd, 1961, Roswell Gilpatrick, what a fucking name, by the way.
He's got to be Irish,
Roswell
surely.
Gilpatrick, perhaps. He's the deputy minister for defense in the US.
Yeah.
He gives a speech and says that the US is actually way ahead of the USSR in terms of the number of missiles and nuclear warheads. In fact, in terms of nuclear warheads, the US has 500 and the USSR has 50.
Is this factual?
This is factual.
Okay.
And the US has intercontinental ballistic missiles and long-range bombers and nuclear submarines way more than the USSR has. And the USSR does not have any intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Shoot first.
Mental. So what
were the, defense systems like back then?
Yeah, so... I don't know how good the defense systems would have been if you send a volley of nuclear warheads. Also, if you shoot one down, you're still going to get... It's still going to be a massive explosion in the sky and you're going to get all of the nuclear jizz coming from it.
So if he said to me, look, you puny little fuckers, we've got 10 times the amount of bombs you have, so don't step on my doorstep, you little cunt. I said, you know what, prick? I'll press my red button and they're en route.
Yeah.
My 50 are en route to blow you up. See ya.
Yes. However, this is a very important thing to understand. The USSR does not have intercontinental ballistic missiles. It does not have long-range missiles.
It
has medium and intermediate. So basically, they have all of their nuclear weapons still in the USSR. It can reach things like China and Europe, but it can't reach the US. The US has weapons in the USA that can reach the USSR.
Right, so
but they
that's
also
where they need
have...
to do a bit like the Troy from the horse from Troy. Sorry.
Yeah.
Dress
like deliver
the
something
nuclear
in.
Nuclear boat. We're like, ooh, look what we're bringing you. It's we've got a load of cigars.
What's this? Yeah,
bang.
Just cigars for you. Don't look any deeper.
Drop those
don't look
baby
under the
boys.
Cigars.
Big boys, little boys. We've little got a boat full of little Drop boys little for boys. You, America. Wink.
Wink, wink. Oh, maybe Jeffrey Epstein was in fact just trading in nuclear missiles. Would it have been better if he was an arms dealer instead of a human trafficker?
I feel like there is many better options than trafficking human beings, especially ones that aren't of age.
Very wise words from you.
Thank you.
JFK in our midst. So on the 30th of October... Oh, yeah. So the US has missiles in Turkey aimed at the USSR as well.
How have they got
So the US
there?
Has all of the ability... They're just fucking mental. And they also had them in Italy and they have nuclear bombers in Italy as well. So yes, the US is incredibly aggressive in its stance. And in terms of the first strike capability, the ability to send nuclear warheads to your enemy... before they are able to fire on you, the US has that ability and the second strike ability. that the USSR does not have. So this relationship between Castro and the USSR is so important to them. 100%, because they're like, we can get missiles. Literally on the doorstep, 458 miles away from the US. So you can get much smaller range sense missiles made in place there and still flatten the US. They said we only need 9. So of the missiles, spoiler alert, this, the USSR sends missiles to Cuba. Damn. Of the missiles that the USSR sends, they said we need 9 of them to completely flatten the USA. They send 50.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. Of these nuclear missiles.
Nice.
Oh.
Are you wrong?
Yeah.
Oh.
So 9 of the missiles that they needed to Cuba to fight in the US. And at the height of the Cold War, they had 10,000. But I think they had 180 missiles in Cuba. I don't know how many of them were nuclear ones.
Jesus.
Many. But the USSR is making moves outside of missiles to close this gap. And on the 30th of October 1961, the largest ever built nuclear weapon is set off. The Tsar Bomber is detonated.
Sounds like a song. Tsar, Tsar Bomber.
Tsar Bomber. It's so powerful. Sorry. People worry that it's detonated. No, keep going. You riff it, girl. its detonation could threaten the whole planet itself. It's 50 megatons, and people are worried that if it was used in anger, it might set the Earth's atmosphere on fire. It is mental. So Christ. It is 50 times bigger than the warheads that were sent to Cuba, and those warheads were 50 times more powerful than the bomb dropped on Hiroshima.
Are we talking about 50 times size, as in size-wise, like it's 50 times
size
as
and
big,
power.
It's got 50 times more power.
No, like as in more power.
Right, okay, because that would have been one big bomb. That wouldn't have been a little boy.
One big bomb.
The bomb.
So the USSR would love to get its missiles in Cuba because it could hit targets in the USA from Cuba, like New York, around 8 minutes after being fired.
Fucking hell.
They want it as like a bargaining chip against the US because they're struggling for influence and power in Europe, not only with the Warsaw Pact, but also in post-war Berlin. Because, you know, Berlin split down the middle, right?
Yeah.
Despite the fact it's in East Germany, it is literally split down the middle. And the wall is built in 1961 by the Soviets. It's part of this whole separatist Iron Curtain policy that the USSR
have. Germans want this wall?
No, probably not. In fact, the US condemned it, saying that you're stopping the East Germans who want to come over to West Germany because it's capitalist and therefore better.
Yeah.
From coming over if they want limiting freedoms, they say it's really bad. But they're hoping that if they have this as a bargaining chip, they might get the whole of Berlin, or they might get more of more power in Germany because the US might relinquish power in West Berlin in order to protect themselves from the missiles in Cuba. So it's basically a cracking fucking idea for USSR and for Cuba if there are missiles 100%. In Cuba.
100%. That would be my first.
So Cuba, the thought process is Cuba and the USSR, they're sovereign states. If they want to have missiles, they can have missiles, right?
Yeah.
But where they differ is that the USSR wants to do this sneaky, real sneaky. It wants to basically do it under the cover of darkness. And then by the time they reveal it to the US, there's nothing that the US can do.
They're here.
Whereas Cuba want it all out in the open. They don't want to be viewed as going behind the US's back. And
so Cuba are like the cuck in this relationship, aren't they?
Cuba is big time cuck to everybody. Yeah. They're getting cucked just watching the rest of the world be able to trade and they can't.
Pussy holes.
They are... It's not great. It's not great for Cuba. I don't know how. I don't know, this is mental, but I feel like the US is not coming off very great in this.
Oh, that's surprising me.
What? That's crazy. So the USSR want to do this covertly and then reveal to the US that they have these missiles and the accompanying infrastructure on the 45th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution. So incredible PR for the USSR. It's all about optics, because the Cold War is all about weapons that nobody can use because it will wipe out humanity. It's all about how these policies and these relations look to everybody else. So this difference between how the USSR and Cuba want to put the missiles in is a huge bone of contention between the two countries. Castro sends his brother Raul to Moscow to try and persuade them, but he's unsuccessful. Khrushchev and the USSR just see him as like real chaotic, and that they kind of want to keep him at arm's length, but they know that they can get something good out of this relation. He's a bit of a mad cunt, but Khrushchev is also misled by his own people, because he's told by his advisors, we can do this sneakily and under the noses of the US, because we can hide the missile installations in dense palm tree forests, which don't exist. Palm trees don't grow in dense forests.
Palm trees don't grow on trees.
So they literally don't grow on trees. I feel like a lot of this could have been avoided if he just got the satellite image up on Google Earth. But
if only.
Who am I to say anything, right?
I know. Idiots.
So late July 1962, the USSR starts sending ships to Cuba with parts of the installations with the missiles.
Is this all legal?
Yeah, it's legal. They are sovereign states, and if they want to trade arms, they can trade arms. But obviously, in terms of diplomatic relations, it's not good for the US.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So the US aren't happy.
Yeah, they never are.
They keep it under wraps by sending Soviet soldiers over in Hawaiian shirts, so they look like they're on holiday. Crazy. The 60s, man, they swing. The 60s fucking swing.
I'm swinging 60s.
So word of mouth does get out that the Soviets are sending missiles over by Cuban exiles coming over to the States, because the CIA and intelligence agencies, they interview every Cuban exile coming over that wants to live in the US, and they're all coming back and saying, yeah, I'm seeing all these missiles and these guys in Hawaiian shirts building installations. It's really weird. And they're all like white and they look like they're drinking vodka. But the CIA doesn't believe it. They said, we've been hearing the same thing since 59. And Kennedy does an oopsie.
Another one.
Not another one.
Another one.
Another one. He believes what the CIA is telling him, that there aren't any missiles being sent over to Cuba.
He's thick as mint. So that's like me leading the US, to be fair, isn't it?
It's the blind leading the blind out here. And so he comes out. And he says in an address that the US's official line is they won't allow any offensive missiles to be brought into Cuba. They were already there. His chief counsel and speechwriter later said that if they had known that the missiles were already in place in Cuba, they would have said no more than 50. Do you know what I mean? So it's all about optics again.
Enough. Yeah.
It just means that they don't actually have to get drawn into an actual war. But he didn't know this. They ignored their intelligence. The CIA ignored their own intelligence. And he's come out in a hard line that he's going to have to defend this position later. Christ. So we're about to get into the actual 13 days of the missile.
That's an unlucky number as well.
It's an unlucky number for every fucking person involved, to be honest with you.
I mean, I'm no historian, but I don't think this ever happened.
If you're going to be like this for every event that we cover, it's going to get boring so fucking quickly.
I know, but I'd have known about this one. If those bombs got dropped,
I'd know about anything,
mate.
You don't know about anything.
Fuck off.
So on the 15th of October, U2 reconnaissance aircraft, U2 Bono.
Look at us, intertwined.
Look at this. Bono. Bono's been flying over Cuba, and they've been taking some imagery. He's got those Google lens glasses You know, he always wears sunglasses. Yeah, the Meta X Ray-Ban collaboration. And he's been taking pictures, and they gather around and they look at these pictures and they're like, fuck. In amongst the dense forest of palm trees. Those are missiles. Those are missiles in Cuba. 485, not 458 miles from Florida.
Are these images around today to be looked at?
Yeah, they might be. It should. I think it's all being released now.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'll look into that.
So, big man security advisor McGeorge Bundy.
No.
Another incredible name.
It isn't Ted's dad.
It could be a relation to Biggie
Holy
Ted.
Shit. McGeorge Bundy.
McGeorge Bundy is
Wait, his
is
first
told.
Name was McGeorge.
I don't know. He was only referred to as McGeorge Bundy, so I reckon that's a double barrel. But this is the
McDonald's
US. We don't know. That was in the 50s.
He sounds like a slack George Yoko, doesn't he? Hey, man, my name is McGeorge Bundy.
Nice to meet y'all. Where's my cigar?
Nice.
It's just un-American. He's told about this on the 15th of October. He said he didn't want to tell JFK about it on the 15th because he knew it was going to be a big day for him the following day, so he wanted him to get him a good night's sleep.
That's fair enough. You don't want to go to bed on bad news.
You certainly don't,
it's
but
like
in reality, I think...
If you ever have an argument with someone, you never go to bed on a bad note, do you? You kiss,
you're
you make
too right.
up. I'll tell you in the morning.
Yeah, so McGeorge Bundy and JFK have had a little snog. But they actually think the reason is that JFK might have had a little prosy round.
No.
Getting his willy wet. So he's told on the 16th of October. So this is, we're getting there, right? They figure out from the imagery that these are medium range ballistic missiles with a range of 2,200 miles. So USA is only 485,
right?
Yeah, about 500 miles away. So they are many miles. They can, exactly. So Kennedy then decides to assemble, the Avengers assemble, the XCOM Committee.
Damn.
Executive Committee of the National Security Council. Bruh, bruh.
Wait,
they meet in the Oval Office
XCOM
for the first time.
Is that what XCOM is meant to stand for? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, Executive Committee.
That's a long name.
In brackets of the National Security Council.
Fuck's sake. They need to work on
that.
Wouldn't
you love to be a member of XCOM, though? At this point, the public still don't know.
Well,
so
why would they
ramp up.
That's causing mass panic.
Yeah, exactly. 100% it's causing mass panic. So... the US is running 3 to 4 recon missions a day by these U2s. Kennedy then decides, first and foremost, let's cut Cuba off from the rest of the world. Op Mongoose has already done this in terms of the economy, but he then dispatches ships to create a blockade around Cuba to stop any other trade getting in.
So this
However,
is like a wall at sea.
A floating wall at sea. The idea is that he still doesn't think they have nuclear weapons at this point. In that they do. There are nuclear warheads there.
Is it just him that doesn't think this? Is just the whole of? Is just the CIA as well?
It's just the whole of the states. After oopsie. So he thinks, right, if we create a blockade around Cuba, then the nuclear warheads aren't going to be able to be brought in. But a blockade, technically, is an act of war.
Well, yeah, because
so
surely
instead,
that could be stopping all sorts of imports.
Baby food and medicine.
That
£53 million pounds worth. Or dollars. Oh, my God. $53 million worth. Instead, he calls it a quarantine. Cute little quarantine.
That is cute.
So somehow by calling it quarantine instead of blockade, they're not technically at war just yet. The 18th of October, the CIA discovers that the USSR already have intermediate ballistic missiles in Cuba, which are double the range of the medium ballistic missiles. Shit. So the medium is 2,200. The maths. Intermediate is 4,400. Boom! Quick maths! Thank you. Thank you very much.
No worries.
So another oopsie. They're like, shit, okay. So they have even longer range than we thought.
They are ballistic missiles.
hot damn.
Hot damn.
Hot damn. No, we ain't
what
safe.
What missiles did they think they were before this then? Just little poxy ones?
So they knew they were medium range, and now they figured out they're intermediate range as well, so even longer range, but still don't think there's any nuclear warheads.
Fucking hell.
They, honestly, they're fucked. So the 22nd of October, Kennedy goes public with an 18-minute radio broadcast. And he says the USA is under serious threat. And he demands that the Soviets withdraw their weapons immediately. So he's going public. He's telling everybody about this. And he is directly addressing the USSR and saying, get them fucking missiles away from my country.
That'll work.
Do you want another quote?
Oh, go on.
Another JFK quote.
Go on.
Even the fruits of victory will be ashes in our mouth.
That one's a bit lame.
Damn.
I don't like that.
Are you joking?
I don't like that.
He's basically saying that none of us want nuclear war, but.
Because no one wins.
If you keep pushing me, because nobody wins, right? But if you keep pushing me, I'll fucking do it, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
so
already,
we will be victorious.
He's bombing these people. Even. He's missed every fucking one.
Yeah, I know. I don't know where he comes from with this. The whole recent memory of the US has just been, yeah, we can fucking flatten you. And then invariably, actually, having said that, Iran, they carpet bombed the fuck out of those nuclear enrichment facilities in Iran. So maybe there is something to be said for the military might of the USA.
What, now, though? We're talking
now, but also in the past.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Obviously, Iran, that was quite recent. That was, what, a couple of weeks ago? Mm. And then the US ambassador to the USSR delivers a personal letter from JFK to Khrushchev, basically saying, please don't do this. Hi, please don't put missiles, nuclear warheads in Cuba. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Kennedy. I'm writing you to return your letter. After careful consideration, I would just like to say, get fucked. Fuck you. We keep bomb. You go bye-bye.
That's literally what he responds with. I'm not even joking. I've written a note. On the 23rd of October, Khrushchev responds and says, lol, fuck you. We're keeping him.
P.S. We smoke cigar now.
We smoke cigar and drink vodka.
Love Khrushchev.
from Russia with love.
And James Bond was born.
No, here comes James Bond. And then the 24th of October 1962, the USA decide to put their military at DEFCON 2.
Shit.
Any podcast is going to be a good podcast as soon as the words DEFCON are said.
I don't
fucking
know what it
incredible.
Means, but it sounds intense.
So what it means is that this is the highest state of alert for the US military before nuclear war. DEFCON 1, nuclear war. DEFCON 2 is basically they are preparing for nuclear war / they are ready. They are ready to go. So bombers fly at what's called a fail-safe point, which means they can't be recalled. So it's like 24 hours getting air-to-air refueled. They take off from Italy, these nuclear-equipped bombers, and they are just flying in circles. They have their radios turned off so that nobody can try and tell them. Nobody can get on the same frequency and say to them, oh, we're your commanders and you need to turn back home. So they can't be any of that, and they're just waiting for, or they're told exactly which Soviet cities are going to be hitting with their hydrogen bombs, and they are just waiting for the order.
Fuck.
So it is, when I say we are close, we are really, really close. This is no other time in history has the US gone to DEFCON 2 ever.
Okay. Oh, mad.
So this is crazy. The US appeals to the UN to try and gain support, and at the same time the USSR are sending submarines to try and get under the blockade. And Khrushchev writes to Kennedy, you are no longer appealing to reason, but wish to intimidate us. Oh, that became bore at the end.
You do.
My wife.
You will never get this.
I got a clock radio he cannot afford. Great success. Khrushchev is great success compared to the USA.
Yeah, he's a big man, to be fair. I like this Khrushchev.
He is a big man. He's fucking incredible. So not as good as Castro, though. Fidel Castro has my heart in all of this.
He's got a sick name as well.
Isn't it? Isn't it just?
Yeah, it's a sick
name. So on the 25th of October, we reach another very close point to this all just exploding. A Soviet oil tanker called the Bucharest is heading to Cuba. The blockade line of the US ships is 100 miles out from Cuba, and the USS Gearing and Essex are preparing to engage this Soviet tanker. Literally getting ready, and then they get a message from the White House saying, stand down, it's not carrying weapons, it's just carrying oil, let it through. But they were ready to sink it, and if they had, big boom. Bigger than Chernobyl.
Oopsie.
At this point, Fidel, my man Fidel, is like, you need to launch the first attack.
100%. You don't want to, as many people in a relationship know this, you don't want to come first. Wait.
In this scenario, you do want to come first.
Yeah, sorry.
The Khrushchev and Castro give absolutely zero fucks as to whether you're coming. They are coming first. They are seeing to their own needs. When they're done and the nuclear jizz is dripping out, they're throwing you a vibrator. The vibrator is a mic drop. They're heading out.
The vibrator
tapping
is
out. See you later.
Here you go.
And our big man Che Guevara, he backs this as well. He comes out and he says, we need to go kinetic. So then 26th of October, Khrushchev writes to JFK. So obviously at this time, the XCOM is panicking. Oh no, I'm really panicking now.
I'm going to lose
my job. They've been found out as paedophiles. And they're getting ready to dropping bombs on anyone that's accusing them of kiddie fiddling. She said she was 12. So Khrushchev writes to JFK, and it's this really long, rambling letter. And he says, listen, mate, he tries to level with him. He's like, we've both seen the destruction of war. We know the destruction that it leads to and the death. Look, let's find a way out. And he offers, Khrushchev is, he offers the removal of missiles from Cuba if Kennedy promises not to invade Cuba.
Okay.
At the same time, completely separately, the head of the KGB in Washington meets with an ABC news correspondent called Scally, old Scallywag. With the same proposal. So when this comes back to the XCOM, they're like, right, okay, this seems like an actual offer, a serious offer from the USSR. And to further bolster this and to try and avoid any kind of inadvertent, because everyone's on a fucking knife edge at this point, to avoid nuclear war, Khrushchev orders that nobody is to fire on any US ships or planes unless ordered to do so. So he's coming out and saying, do not at all ever fire upon any US military objectives unless expressly told by the Kremlin. He's not behind this. I've got a sentence in my notes that says Castro not behind this. He does not like it at all. Exactly, don't fiddle Fidel. So by the 27th of October the following day, everyone's feeling relief, man. They're like, we're close. Oh, thank God. They're taking a puff on their Cuban cigars or Nicaraguan cigars, probably. And they're like, come together.
Right now. Over me.
But then another letter from Khrushchev arrives.
Him and his letters, man. He needs to get an iPhone.
Not another one.
Honestly,
if they just had some iPhones, they could just like video call each other and be like, listen, big man, let's swing our dicks on this and figure it
out. Look, JFK, we don't need to push it this far.
My friend.
That's when Castro tries joining the call, isn't it? Hang up on Fidel.
What do you say fuck Fiddy for? Fidel, hang up. You don't need to get involved in this. So this second letter from Khrushchev to JFK says, listen, we will remove our missiles if you promise not to invade Cuba and you take your missiles out of Turkey.
That's fair, I feel.
Chaos. Not for the US, all right? It might seem fair to you, but anything that seems fair to you is deeply unfair to the USA. It's their freedom at stake here. It's just simply un-American to think about anybody else apart from America.
The land of the free.
And the brave and those armed with nuclear missiles. So this really ups the ante. Chaos ensues. This is also delivered via public announcement on radio in Moscow, which means that Khrushchev can't back down. He's now said these are the terms that I've given to the USA, and he has to be held to this. The general feeling in Washington is that there might have been a coup of some description, that the generals have written this, and they're pressuring Khrushchev to take a more hardline approach. At the same time, Castro addresses the Cubans on national radio, saying that the enemy is about to attack us. We have to rise up, right? At the same time as all of this is going on, a U-2 pilot by the name of Rudolf Anderson Jr. is circling Cuba doing some reconnaissance. 14 miles below, Lieutenant General Stefan Goretzko, he sees a blip on the radio and he's like, this is it. This is it. They're coming for us. Radar. And he's like, we got to shoot this down. He said at that time, he felt more Cuban than Russian because he was so inspired by Castro's speech. And in that fervor, he shoots down the U-2.
Brother.
Oh, I'm really panicking now, brother. So... Kennedy is then kind of backed into a corner here. His pilot's dead. U-2 in smoldering remains in Cuba. U-2, oh, Bono. If only they were. You remember when that Songs of Innocence? I'm not being funny. When Songs of Innocence are like, oh, everyone can have this for free, and I was like, I don't want this. I'm not interested in it.
This is when they put the fucking album on iTunes.
That's so presumptuous. I've never listened to U2 in my life.
Name one U2 song.
No, I'm sure there's a big one.
If one came on, I could probably sing it, but I wouldn't be able to name any of them.
Oh, and I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Anderson.
And I still haven't found nuclear weapons.
No, just palm trees.
Because they were there. If he'd have taken the fucking glasses off, if he'd have had, instead of the sunglasses in, just the regular frames, the regular meta frames, then he might have seen a bit better. So Kennedy then says, right, okay, if they shoot down another plane, US plane, then we are invading. We're going 100%.
To war. That's fair.
However, another little oopsie. In Florida, the US had 180,000 troops ready to invade. So that would have been the force that they would have invaded with. They thought that the strength of the opposition was 100,000 Cubans and 40,000 Soviet troops. In reality, there were 400,000 Cuban troops and 43,000 Soviet troops.
Fuck.
So what is that?
I'm annoyed that you can... I think the cat is in the litter tray and I'm surprised my microphone's picking that up.
To be fair, that was really loud. To be fair, we had a surprise entrance of... surprise appearance of one of your cats last time. So it's only right that we have another one this time.
Yeah, maybe it's a trip to the vets for that cat.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. You're not coming back. And obviously they believed that here's the number of nuclear warheads they had. And they believed that there weren't any warheads there when in fact there were 160 nuclear warheads. So
fuck me.
If they had have invaded, the US would have lost pretty fucking significantly. So it's called Black Saturday, and they all feel like the noose is tightening. Plenty of people are advising Kennedy to invade. The ex-com decide to take a little break from their meeting, and at this point they're all sure there's going to be nuclear war. The defense secretary, McNamara, says to his mate, who's also on ex-com, George Ball, I don't think we will live to see another spring. They are readying to escape to a mountain hideaway so that they can get out of the way of the nuclear war. And what Kennedy does is actually the first spring and probably break. Only smart thing. Spring break, baby! They're all going to Cancun. The wall's not there, so it's fine. They can just get there quite easily. Kennedy decides to play for time. So he says, if they shoot down another plane, we will launch an attack. But you know what he does?
God.
He cancels all surveillance flights. So he says, if you shoot down another plane, we'll attack. But then he doesn't give them a plane to shoot down.
Pussy owl.
I think that's pretty clever.
Yeah, if you're a pussy.
And he says, let's wait until Monday to fully talk about this. It's a Saturday night. He's basically giving everyone more time. And then one of his advisors and ambassador. He wants to go fuck a prozzy, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Marilyn Monroe's waiting.
Back to the prostitutes.
In the bedroom in the White House.
This is how the Chernobyl one ended. It's all about the prostitutes.
Cocaine and hookers, man.
Every day.
He's got his lines racked up. The hookers are waiting for him. He's like, give me until Monday. But a hero steps out from the mists. Llewellyn Thompson, who is ambassador, US ambassador to Moscow, he steps forward and he says, look, there is a way out. I know Khrushchev personally. He does not want a nuclear war. All we have to do to avoid nuclear war is to give him a way to save face. Everything's given its own. All the events seem to have gotten a momentum of their own. Let's see if we can find a way that we can get out of this. So Kennedy's, JFK's brother, Robert Kennedy, who's also the Attorney General, yet more nepotism. He's sent to meet with the USSR ambassador to the US, Anatoly Debrenin. And he basically says to him, we will agree to the conditions of the first letter. We will not invade Cuba if you remove the missiles.
But they want their bombs and in Turkey?
In Turkey.
They want to keep them there.
Debrenin then sends a coded message and the only way to Moscow to tell Khrushchev about this offer. But the only way they can get one there, because there aren't open lines of communication, is by using Western Union Telegram, which is just like a commercial telegram.
Yeah.
And a 17-year-old bike messenger in Moscow picks up this telegram and cycles on his little bike over to the Kremlin to take it to Khrushchev. And luckily, it makes it there. So on the 28th of October, Khrushchev announces that the missiles are going to be removed if the USA promises not to invade. So this is technically the end of the crisis. But what's interesting is that as of the 25th of October, 3 days prior and before Khrushchev had sent that letter saying, get your missiles out of Turkey and I'll do the same with Cuba, Khrushchev had already decided to remove the missiles. So he was being very, very clever and basically seeing how much leverage he can get. And one of the conditions of this truce between the USA and the USSR is hidden from public view. The US says it will remove the missiles from Turkey, and for 25 years this is kept from the public.
Oh, damn.
Robert Kennedy says to Debrenin, is that his name? Anatoly Debrenin. If you let this get public, we will renege and we'll invade Cuba straight away. So for 25 years, the US public has
snitches
no idea that the missiles have been removed.
That's where the term was born.
They certainly, certainly do. So the US strategic forces are kept at DEFCON 2 even after this conclusion. And then they're going about dismantling the missiles. Castro is being even more of a dickhead. He's saying, the US are saying, listen, we want our own people there to view the dismantling of the missiles to make sure you don't leave any behind, right? Castro is like, fuck you. I don't want to give up these missiles.
Nah.
And at this time, USSR is like, okay, we won't let you on your own view it, but we'll get a team delegated from the UN to come over.
Yep.
Castro is like, fuck off. I'm keeping these missiles. And the USSR fully distances themselves from Castro and throw him under the bus. And on the 12th of November of 1962, Khrushchev rescinds all of the Soviet infrastructure and all the missiles, gets everything, wants to start getting everything back, but he doesn't tell Castro. So he doesn't tell Castro, all of my troops and all of my Soviet gear is coming back with me.
Poor Fidel.
He just removes it. Castro only finds this out in 1963. So I don't know how he doesn't know about this. At this point, he's like, fuck you, both the USSR and the US. And he starts funding revolutionary struggles across Latin America and Africa. Another cute little thing from Kennedy, which is actually a pretty good power move. On the 20th November 1962, he calls a press conference. And Castro's like, fuck, he's going to announce that they're going to invade. Because at this point, all of the US strategic forces are still at DEFCON 2. So he's like, okay, fine, I'll let you do the inspections. And I'll let you take the weapons away. And it turns out the conference was just about stepping down from DEFCON 2. So Kennedy was pretty clever there, which is probably only time.
Fair.
And then the 7th of January 1963, the UN formally ends the crisis. And it seems like the USA and the USSR are coming together in terms of their nuclear power. And they come up with a treaty to kind of limit and make the testing of nuclear weapons more open.
Damn.
So yeah, in 1989 is the first time that USA actually acknowledges that there were already nuclear warheads in Cuba during the crisis. And in 1992 is the first time it was announced how many there were.
Public.
That there were nuclear warheads in Cuba at the time. They didn't know. Robert McNamara, you know, the Secretary for Defense, he at this time had decided to put combination locks on all the warheads, like the codes. But someone had decided, so that not to waste any time, basically he'd put the combinations on to slow down the process and make sure that nobody could sabotage the firing of the missiles, so that they could only be fired in a very deliberate way.
Yep.
And only if everyone decided for it. But the combinations were all made to 8 zeros. So it wasn't very safe at all.
Famously, that isn't the first code you'd put in.
What? I would never choose that.
Me either. I'll start at 0000001.
Yeah, nice. And then just go 0000002.
Exactly.
Nice. I'm glad we're on the same wavelength there. But one good thing that comes out of it is that there is a hotline installed directly between the Kremlin. Hotline bling.
Is this the red phone?
It's Drake on one end. It's the red phone between Kremlin and the White House, so they can avoid it getting to this far again.
Famously, another incredible fallout.
Was it black?
I don't think it was even a phone. I think it was like a fax machine.
Is this? Did we talk about this last time?
I don't know. I don't know where I've got this from, but I might be completely wrong, but I think I'm right. That's the statement of my life.
Yeah, I did know if I'm wrong or I'm right. There are some very interesting takeaways from this, because this crisis is viewed as, in some ways, an excellent blueprint for diplomatic relations, because both sides could portray themselves as the victor in this, because the US managed to get the missiles out of Cuba and break relations between Cuba and the USSR. And the USSR managed to ensure that Cuba wasn't going to get invaded and also get the missiles removed from Turkey. So,
yeah, so
the
no
US
one was
believed.
At that point, were they?
Oh, exactly.
Apart from Cuba.
Cuba just got fucked. It just got raw dogged the whole time. Zero lube, nuclear jizz up the arse.
I'll take it.
The US main takeaway was that they could use coercive diplomacy, and they believed that the reason that the USSR backed down was the threatening of the invasion of Cuba, which isn't true. It was just the USSR trying to avoid the demolition of the entire human race. And the USSR believed that the cause of the crisis was US, what it called adventurism. So how aggressively the US had cultivated support and influence in across Latin America, across Europe, obviously because it had missiles pointed at it from Turkey and Italy, and across Asia. So it's basically saying that it believed that the whole reason that the crisis came about was the US was getting too big for its boots.
So where were we in all of this? Were we just on the sidelines ready to back up the US?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. The UK just isn't a superpower at this point. So,
no.
What were we doing in the 60s?
Strippers and cocaine. I don't
obviously.
Know.
Obviously. In Liverpool. Not a lot. Having the time of our lives.
Every day.
So the USSR then starts to significantly build up their military. Khrushchev is ousted from power in 1964, and the Soviet generals pour everything into closing the missile gap. Thus, the lives of the average USSR citizen significantly declines as they pour all of their money into the military. Same with Cuba. Already they're not doing very well, but they decide absolutely everything is going into my military now to stop the US from invading us. But at this point, the US has decided Cuba is not a big player anymore in terms of what they're interested in. They're like, do you know what? Just fucking leave it.
You do you, bro.
Had enough of you now. Robert Kennedy, you know, Kennedy's brother, he comes out and says that the destruction of the human race had been avoided all because of luck. That was how close we came to the human race
what
no longer.
What a different world. Sure, it wouldn't have ended the whole of the human race, but...
Yeah, it would. Everyone dead. Fallout, mate. Have you not seen it?
I have.
It's a documentary.
It's fictional.
I mean, you think about the fallout, literally, of Chernobyl and how powerful these bombs are after they've developed them from 1945.
There's got to be someone sitting there that would avoid it.
Nicaragua?
Yes.
They're all just on their puffing on cigars. So, yeah, that is the Cuban Missile Oopsie.
That is a crazy tale, you know. I can't believe... I mean, I'd never even knew this was a thing until I was throwing podcast ideas around, and I had a bit of a get together with certain people, and they brought it up. I never knew this was a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing, and it's fucking mental.
Many things like this is something I would love to look into more. I won't, but it's very interesting. If there's a documentary,
I think I've done a comprehensive.
No, that's 100%. I like a documentary. I'm not reading.
So you could listen to the short history of the Cuban Missile Crisis, podcast on Spotify, if you are so inclined, but it will just be a replay of what I've told you because that was the main bulk of my research.
That's fair. I enjoyed it.
And that guy, we're talking about soothing voices, that guy that narrates that has a fucking soothing voice.
I wonder who you're talking about.
At risk of angering the Discord community further, shall we perhaps go into how we would have done things differently? And might
I
start?
You go.
So I was thinking a way that we could have avoided all of this is a round robin battle royale style matchroom boxing event between Kennedy, Khrushchev, and Castro.
Are they all but in the room at the same time?
I'm thinking probably octagon.
Yeah.
They're all in there together and they're just wailing on each other.
Fists only?
Yes, fucking slugfest.
Who have you got coming out on top? Because I think big Fidel's.
There's only one. It's Fidel.
Fidel is fuming.
And I'm not mad about that. Let's proliferate the Cuban cigar.
See, I'm on the other side of this from you. I wouldn't go for prevention. If I was Cuba, I would have just dropped a bomb.
To be fair, they had the missiles. It seemed to me that the Soviets were the ones in control of the missiles the whole time. But why not just overpower them? They had 400,000 troops, which is like 10 times the size of our armed forces. Just fucking overpower them. Start lobbing nuclear weapons at the cunts.
He's been made to look a right cunt for all of this.
He's been cucked so hard.
I feel bad for the guy, and I think he should have just thought, you know what? Fuck this. You're getting blown up.
Fuck this. I'm out.
Once they've sent them out, they just have to retaliate and send them back. So, yes, it would be a bit of a disaster, but he wouldn't have looked like a bitch, and they made him look like a bitch in all of this.
And after all, I mean, would any of our lives be that different if Cuba got flattened into a smoking atomic mess?
Apart from the lack of cigars, no. And I don't like them anyway.
You don't even like them. Exactly. So Nicaragua might have been the Cuba of America.
Oh, yeah, but they would have been more expensive then, so...
True. So I suppose it's fucking toss up, isn't it? I mean, what do we want out of this situation?
I'd
nuclear war and more expensive
it.
Nicaraguan cigars.
I've never paid for a pay-per-view event, but I would have paid to watch them have a scrap.
A little battle royale. Yeah. What are you saying then? What's your thoughts on how this could have been? How would you have done this differently?
Like I said, I think I would have pressed the button.
Is that seriously what you thought of when I said, you said, yeah, I'm going to think more. After the Discord feedback, you said, I'm going to think more about what I would have done differently.
Yeah,
and yours is, let's just have nuclear war.
Yeah, but it was.
Fucking hell.
Would have been an event, a spectacle.
No, I think it's a battle royale match room. Fucking Eddie Hearn's doing the promotion for it. It's going
to
go down. Jake Paul comes out of nowhere.
Eddie Hearn?
Flying elbow.
Oh, that cunt could die.
Okay, so we had the battle royale and then Jake Paul just dies.
That's a win for everyone.
I think we may have just sold it.
Well, he wouldn't have been there, so we would have had to kill the bloodline there.
Okay, so we get Jake Paul's ancestor, who's about in 1962.
Yeah.
And then it's a four-way.
100%. And who comes out? Yeah, but that's what they'd end up winning somehow.
No, but then they die. Everyone's dead.
Everyone is dead.
Perfect.
But then we wouldn't be having this conversation.
How do we think the Discord community is going to feel about that?
They're probably all going to slander me again, but let's be honest, I've been trying to do research for the last 15 years of my life, and I don't think it's ever gone well.
So this might be a failed concept, but at least, do you know what? I bought it this time.
Failure. I'm still enjoying this. The concept might be completely off, and you never know. Different subjects, I might have a completely different output on things. But the minute,
having said
I'm
that,
struggling.
Chris, I think we're missing one huge glaring area where your expertise might have actually played into how these events took place.
Go on.
It's the fucking palm tree forest, mate. You're a tree surgeon.
Oh.
If you'd have just gone up to Khrushchev and been like, mate, palm tree forests don't exist. And
look, bruv, it's not
they're not dense enough
tree.
To hire missile installations.
Okay, okay.
Then he might
now
have
talking,
rethought
you know,
the whole thing.
Now you've triggered my brain. If they'd planted a lot of conifer, they probably never would have spotted this. A dense conifer
again,
woodland in the middle of Cuba.
Again, you're going into ways that the USSR and Cuba might have come out on top in this situation.
Should have planted different trees.
I'm going for how we could have avoided it entirely. You could have gone up to Khrushchev and been like, mate, a palm tree isn't going to hide your 180 nuclear warheads.
Look here, bruv.
Intercontinental.
Look here, you need
listen,
to import
Khrushchev.
Some conifer hedges, a bit of laurel. It will take a few years to grow, but when it's there, it's grown. Nothing's stopping
just,
that.
Just sit down in a sauna with some birch branches and vodka. Smacked him with a birch branch across the arse, done a shot of vodka, got into a plunge pool, and then said, conifers, mate.
Conifers, bruv. And conifers. I think this leads perfectly into my favourite section of the show.
Oh, my
is
God,
Chris's
I'm so
facts.
Excited. The Chris's robots.
Chris's
it's
factual
the robots.
Corner. Who do you want to start with first? So we've got... I've got an interesting fact about Khrushchev and Castro. So you pick who you
Castro.
Want me to go with first.
Okay. Castro.
Did you know that he was obsessed with milk?
What kind of milk?
Just milk. He loved milk so much that he tried breeding a
Kitties.
Super cow in Cuba.
What is a yep. super cow, Chris?
So one of
what
his
is
cows,
a super cow?
One of his cows, Ubre Blanca, broke the world record in milk production.
Oh.
The Cuban media. What do you mean? The Cuban media reported that she gave 24 gallons of milk a day.
24? How much does a normal cow give?
Didn't look into that.
It's not as easy
though.
As it seems, is it?
It's a world record, though.
24 yeah, gallons? Is this like gallon is in 4.4 litres?
That's a big boy. That's a lot of milk from one cow. But it's a super cow.
And he drank it all?
Yeah, the Beyonce of cows.
Just
one.
Sitting there with a cowboy hat, Rhinestone cowboy
following,
hat.
Following the dairy, he loved ice cream so much that he built a dairy empire.
I mean, that clearly didn't help him that much. He still got cucked. Do you think he got cucked by his cow too?
Probably, but he
just watching his super cow get fucked.
Reportedly, he once ate 18 scoops of ice cream in one sitting.
What's your asshole doing after 18 scoops of ice cream?
Mine.
That's just wet. Liquid, isn't
that's
it?
That's wet, yeah.
That's
wet.
Just coming out as milk. Yeah. You're spending an awful lot of time. If he spent less time on the toilet and with his harem of women and more time around nuclear missile installations, he might have avoided the title of biggest cuck of history.
Ice cream. Neapolitan.
But he just loved the milk too much.
Don't we all?
What's your favourite ice cream?
We all have... Ooh. A pistachio.
Pistachio?
Yeah.
Are you a nonce? I didn't realise you were a nonce. I feel like my favourite, even if you didn't ask, is raspberry ripple.
I feel like I would have asked, and then you called me a nonce.
Yeah, you're right, actually. That might have been a misjudgment for me.
Back
there.
To my corn.
Can we have the Khrushchev fact, please?
He was obsessed with corn.
With corn, like sweet corn?
Yeah.
Popping candy.
And after visiting some American farms, when he went home, he was convinced that corn would save the Soviet economy.
And alas, it did not.
No, he launched a big campaign to plant it everywhere, including Siberia.
Corn in Siberia?
Yep. But
this man does not know his plants well at all.
Corn doesn't love the frozen tundra.
Oh, the frozen tundra. Who does love the frozen tundra? Probably not cows.
Not corn.
If he'd have just stuck to... If he'd have got some kind of agricultural advisor who knew the benefits of coniferous plants and the detriment of corn.
I'm thinking Time Team. Who was the one that liked gardening on BBC? What was his name?
Alan Titchmarsh.
Yes, he should have got Big Titchmarsh in there.
Send in Big Tits, because Big Titty would also, I think, satisfy the milk craving for Castro, as well as advising Khrushchev on all his agricultural endeavours.
Look at that.
We have solved the Cuban Missile oopsie very easily.
You just need Alan Titchmarsh.
Alan Titchmarsh.
Yeah, and Khrushchev also, he wanted to tour Disneyland and he got really mad when he couldn't. They said
that's
no
not very
because
Soviet.
It cited security concerns. Yeah, but who wouldn't want to go and see Donald? Who's Donald?
Do you think he would have just walked around it? Do you think he would have just walked around it? Or do you think he would have gone on the rides? Could you imagine Khrushchev on the rides?
Who wouldn't want to go on the rides?
Chubby, thick-set man who fought in the Bolshevik Revolution and in the First World War.
It would have been a sight to behold.
Just sitting there. Do you think he would have been as unimpressed as I was by Alton Towers?
Maybe.
He'd have just sat there on the rides, like, straight-faced. the emoji with the two eyes and then just a line for a mouth.
This
and then
ride
he would have been like,
fucking shit.
I did not enjoy.
I would like to see Mickey and Minnie go fuck now. And moving on.
He's a cuck as well.
He is a cuck. But moving on to my final fact. How many Skittles do you think you could fit in an R-12 nuclear missile?
Is it 28 billion?
34 million. And when that bad boy hits... Taste that rainbow, bitch.
What a sentence to end that on.
And on that note, I think we are done.
We're done. Well, we're done. Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you to the Discord community and shout out to Brie over in North Dakota.
Also, in the episode description and the podcast description, I have dropped an email address in there. So if anyone has anything they'd like to comment on, anything we've said wrong, please feel free to drop in any ideas, send them across, we will have a look at them, and never know, it might pop up in the next one.
Or any fun facts about anything, because ooh, Chris's fact corner
I do love a fat,
has
fun
so far disappointed.
Well, fuck off.
Especially if you can say which popular confectionery, how much of it fits in
military
installation.
Yeah,
that would be incredible. You didn't do the maths. Don't lie. You asked ChatGPT. We have absolutely no way of fact checking this.
I worked out the circumference of a Skittle.
They're not round. They're not circular.
They're pretty round.
They're not
to
a circle.
Me, fuck.
It's not
you
fucking
seen
sphere,
a Skittle
is it?
Before?
It's not fucking sphere.
I'm not looking around.
They're also
like
not
2D
circles. They're also not. There's like it's like a 3D fucking. What, oval?
You're a 3D oval. I'm ending it there.
Thank you very, very much for listening. Yeah. Please do feel free to send us any comments, any ideas for future episodes, as Chris has already said. And just, do you know what? Just go have some milk. Drink some milk.
Peace out, home dogs.
Peace out.